Welcome to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir.
If you've got pets, he's got answers.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Steve can help. We're positive.
Oh, God, this thing is going downhill fast.
You've got America's pet expert here on Steve Dale's Pet World.
I will tell you, one of the biggest issues, it's like a religion, is pet food. And I think there are so many misconceptions, mistaken notions about pet food. People get entrenched in these beliefs that sometimes are true, but sometimes are totally not true. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to go to someone who really does know. Dr. Lisa Freeman is a veterinary nutritionist, a clinical professor of nutrition at Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine at Tufts University. Hello, Dr. Freeman.
Good morning.
Well, it's almost like, where do you start? Because people read things that are well-meaning and care, I would argue. That's why they're reading those things in the first place. But they are sometimes misinformed and led down a peculiar path. And I want to talk about some of the most common misconceptions. So you get a bag of pet food and you compare it with another bag of pet food. You're at the pet store and you're looking at the list of ingredients. Is that the right way to make a comparison and for you as a consumer to make your decision?
Well, it actually pains me to see people doing that at the pet store, and I see it all of the time. Owners want to do the best for their pets. They want to choose the best food possible. And when we have done numerous studies, we've found that most owners say that the ingredient list is the most important factor they use in selecting their pet's food. And unfortunately, that ingredient list is one of the least useful pieces of information on that pet food label. There are some regulations about the ingredient list, but it doesn't tell you anything about the quality of the ingredients, and it doesn't tell you how the ingredients were put together to make sure that they're nutritious. And in fact, the ingredient list is used for marketing to us. You know, if you read that there's artichokes and blueberries and kale in your cat's food, that's not in there for the nutritional value. That's in there for us as the owners, because it's appealing to our senses to want to have that in our pet's food.
But I thought blueberry and kale are healthy things, and they're not?
They certainly can be healthy parts of a diet, although most cats will not eat those types of ingredients on their own. But in the ingredient list, where you typically see them is in the last few ingredients on the list. So basically, anything that is below the vitamins and minerals in the ingredient list is in minuscule amounts. The levels, I call them fairy dust.
Yeah, so the amount of blueberries would be good for dogs or kale, I assume. Maybe cats wouldn't say, I want that stuff necessarily. But dogs could be a different story. But what you're saying is that it's so low down there. It's fine, but you're probably better off if you believe blueberries are a good thing, giving some blueberries to your dog every day.
Exactly. That would be a wonderful treat. Blueberries are great treats. And the other part of having all of those ingredients in the ingredient list is we have to make sure there's really good quality control. So that's extra work to make sure every single ingredient in that list has the best possible quality control.
And how does the pet owner know that? Maybe by going to a company that is well-known as opposed to a company that isn't? Or is that not a factor? I don't know.
Well, the things I like to look for to make sure that a company is going to truly have good quality control and good nutritional expertise is you really have to ask questions. There's nothing on the label where you can find that. I want to make sure that a company actually has a qualified nutritionist full-time on their staff, at least one, if not multiple, that they have their own manufacturing plants, that they have very rigorous quality control. So there are a variety of factors that we have to find out about a company. It's not just the ones who have the most expensive foods or the ones who have the best marketing. It's the ones who truly have the expertise and quality control procedures in place to make sure that the food is going to be the best for their pet and that don't perpetuate the many myths that we see in pet foods as well.
And I know most of your colleagues, if not all of them, feel the same way you do. You are reporting fact to me, but yet pet owners don't necessarily perceive it that way. Is it because we just don't know?
it's such a confusing area now. It's a, you know, multi-billion dollar industry, and there's so much marketing. It's really difficult for owners to understand all of this and to sift through the marketing. So we've actually set up a website at Cummings School to try and provide expert advice and accurate information on pet food rather than pet owners having to sift through all of it on their own. So that's called Pet Foodology. And we're trying to provide that information on all of these different myths and all the ways that owners can truly select the best food for their pet, not just basing it on marketing.
And what's the website?
So it's petfoodology.tufts.edu.
Okay, let's do that again. petfoodology.tufts.edu. Now, there are other myths and misconceptions. My problem is we are totally out of time, so hang in there, and we will have, if it's okay with you, Dr. Freeman, yet another conversation, because there are other myths and misconceptions I do want to talk about. Dr. Lisa Freeman is a veterinary nutritionist, professor of clinical nutrition at the Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine, Tufts University, and truly is one of the world's experts on nutrition. So we are talking about objectively here, what is fact and what isn't so much at all fact, but it doesn't mean you don't read about it a lot on the internet. And we talked last week, Dr. Freeman, about how people make decisions. Often it's about what folks read on the label, which I understand how that makes sense, but you explained, yes, it can give you some feeling for some things, but doesn't tell you anything about a whole lot of other things. But I also want to talk about two buzzwords. One, byproducts. So the first thing I want to do is, well, what are they in the first place?
So I'm glad you asked about that one, because that's probably the most common question I get from owners about pet foods. And it's a really unfortunate term because it sounds scary. Byproduct sounds like what you sweep up off the floor at the end of the day. But in fact, byproducts just refers to the parts of the animal that we as Americans don't typically eat. So the heart, the kidneys, the lungs, whereas in other countries, those are actually delicacies. So byproducts are just the parts of the animal that are not the muscle, so the internal organs. And it doesn't have anything to do with the quality of the ingredient, just the part of the animal. So there can be excellent quality byproducts. There can be poor quality byproducts, just as there are good and poor quality muscle meat. So it has nothing to do about the quality, just the part of the animal.
And are some of these byproducts that are used, which is a broad list of things, internal organs, are some of them actually, if not many, let me rephrase that, are all of them used in pet foods actually a good thing for our pets?
So if they are of good quality, just as we would want of all of the other ingredients, they can be excellent parts of pet food. Many of the organ meats are actually higher in essential nutrients like amino acids and minerals and vitamins, and more palatable to pets than the muscle meat. And so it actually can be an excellent part of a good quality food. So most times when I explain to pet owners what byproducts actually are, it's much less scary and they feel more comfortable about them. So it's just that many people are not aware of what they are. The other thing I think to think about with byproducts is that if we started feeding only muscle meat to our pets, that actually brings up a sustainability issue, because we're going to be competing with the human food chain, and that's actually going to be more farm animals that have to be produced and killed for meat if we're going to use only the muscle meat.
Yeah, I've been to some of these sessions, and long term it's fascinating when you hear the experts talk about what we'll be eating. Mm-hmm. 50 years from now, let alone what our pets may be eating, but that's a whole different topic. Another one of those buzzwords I want to ask you about, grains. Again, let's identify what they really are as opposed to what people think they are, and then the benefits, if there are any, to our pets.
So grains can also be part of a very good nutritious diet for both dogs and cats. There has been, in recent years, a real increase in grain-free foods and the marketing that has gone along with that. And really, it's been, the increase in the number of these types of diets has been due to marketing by manufacturers who are looking for ways to make their food stand out in a very crowded marketplace. Some of the myth that I hear about grains is that dogs and cats can't digest them. But in fact, both dogs and cats can digest and metabolize grains very well, so that's no problem. And they are not in the foods as filler. They're actually there to provide protein, vitamins, and minerals. And in many cases, the grains are higher in nutritional value than the other ingredients that are put in the grain-free foods, such as potatoes or tapioca. So in many cases, it's actually a more nutritious ingredient than what it's often replaced with.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff, and I think challenging today because the marketplace is so crowded and because pet food companies so efficiently market and aggressively market in some cases, it's difficult for pet owners to figure all this out. I really think so.
Yes, and there's also, you know, many people have the perception that their dog or cat has a grain allergy. That's also been a myth that is perpetuated. And food allergies are actually very rare in dogs and cats, but even the small percentage of dogs and cats that do have a food allergy are very, very unlikely to have an allergy to grain. So the concern about grain allergies is really unfounded.
Now, you have a website that clears up a lot of this stuff. What is the website?
Yes, we set up a website to try and cut through some of the clutter and myths and misperception out on the internet about pet food. And it's called Pet Foodology, and it's petfoodology.tufts.edu.
Petfoodology.tufts.edu. We'll provide a link, of course. Dr. Freeman, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Have you heard of this town? It's called Rabbit Hash, Kentucky. It is registered as a and recognized as a in the National Register of Historic Places in America. It is a pretty cool little city to see from all accounts. There are 315 people that live in this town, but this town had a problem. And their general store had a fire and needed reconstruction. So what did they do? How do you raise money for that? They had an interesting way to do it. They said, okay, we're going to have some unique candidates for mayor, and you can vote. And for every candidate you vote for, I think it's a dollar for each vote that goes to raise money for repairing and rectifying the general store. So the candidates included, here, let me see here. The candidates included a cat, a chicken, and a jackass. Can I say that on the air? A burro. Maybe that's better. And the winner of the election wasn't any of those, but instead a dog, a 3-year-old pit bull dog named Gwyneth Paltrow, and a landslide victory. You know what? If every election were like this, we would not be complaining about our political candidates. And the good news for me, okay, this is a pit bull type dog. At least I know there will be no breed-specific banning pit bulls in this particular town.